This was the same person I was living with for a time, and she was traveling, and she returned to New York, and she needed a place to stay, so she came back. And things are working out okay.
How does it feel compared to the other, to being alone?
It feels really good. I find that because of what I went through alone, that it's improved most of my close friendships, this one especially.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a painter, and so is my friend.
Uh-huh.
And I find that we're able to talk much more clearly than ever before about all the changes we're going through in regards to our work and in regards to ourselves.
And you don't think that you were scared of it before? You didn't have to deal with any of the kinds of fear that I was talking about before? Because I wonder if that's partly a function of a difference in age. If maybe, I hope, women who are growing up now are a little bit less afraid of all that. Most of the women I know my age are pretty nervous about it.
Well, I was pretty nervous about it before, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like something I just kind of stumbled into.
Mm-hmm.
Although I always felt somehow, I always knew that I was the kind of person who probably would want to live alone for a while, you know, because I guess I am a loner,
yeah,
sort of. But my mother has just recently divorced, well, actually she's separated now from my father, and she's a 53-year-old woman. And it's possible that she may be getting her own place and living alone, but she's absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
And, well, she sees me and what I've done, and she's never lived alone, and, you know, she admires me for what I've done, but she's really terrified of doing that.
Call her up and tell her to turn on the radio.
Well, she's working.
Oh.
Well, anyway, it's been nice talking with you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, I just had to turn down my radio.
Yeah, do.
I live alone, and I have been for about 15 years.
Hmm.
And I'm 38, and let's see, for 2 years in art school, and then I came here to New York, and I found a curious thing. Let's see, I don't quite know how to put it. This is, I'm nervous, too.
I am too before I get on the air.
Well, it's even worse when you call up. But you find yourself confronting, call it devils within yourself or tape loops, you know, notions that you've gotten from your parents,
mm-hmm.
from society, and you find yourself, at least I found myself, being besieged by these... I don't quite know how to put it. And it's like I had to do warfare.
Yeah.
With these notions where I had to, where there's another part of me where I had to go follow my own drummer, follow my own
mm-hmm.
Thing. I'm an artist and I'm printmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like it was major warfare to break away from... hearing my father's voice in my imagination, you know, putting me down.
Sure.
And also, that another thing, I got involved in the women's movement, and...
When?
Oh, let's see, about 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I've been involved in it now for all this time.
Yeah,
and
yeah, me
I
too.
And that was the only thing that helped me overcome these habitual thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like... they sort of keep going around in your head, around and around and around, and they're sort of putting you down, you know, these notions. And I'm not putting this together very well, but...
No, I know what you mean. It's interesting that...
It makes me think of St. Anthony going out into the desert and fighting devils.
Yeah, yeah.
I really think that's what you come up to when you live alone for any length of time, you know. I think it can be some kind of spiritual experience.
I'm interested, though, in the fact that, I as I understood what you said, that you had been alone for 10 years.
15.
And 15. No, but that you had been alone for 10 when you got involved in the women's movement.
Yeah.
And that it was that helped you exorcise those demons.
Yeah, because I tried therapy before,
mm-hmm.
usually with male therapists, and they just didn't do a thing.
Yeah, because I didn't live alone at all until I got involved in the women's movement. It was that took me away from suburban housewifery.
Yeah.
And without it, I mean, I went through a much shorter process. It only took me, you know, a couple of months.
Yeah.
But
I think there's another factor with me. I'm also very much of a loner. I just never had close relationships with people, even though I have a lot of very dear friends.
Yeah.
For some reason, I found getting involved with people, even not living with both men and women, I found it difficult to be aware of my own skin boundaries. I don't know how.
Yeah, there was a woman who I had on the tape that I played before, the woman who said she had been married for 18 years and then had left. If you heard that?
Yes, I did.
She didn't say on the tape, but she once said about the end of her marriage that she realized that she had stopped knowing where her husband ended and she began.
That's what I found.
It seems to me that I'm a lot clearer on that now than I was before I lived alone and before feminism.
Yeah.
I know that the person I'm living with now, we seem to be more certain of, I seem to feel much more certain of where I end and she begins than I was in that other part, you know, when I lived with people before I had lived alone. Certainly, I'm different with my kids.
Yeah.
Now I used to also not know where they ended and I began.
Yeah.
You know.
I could see that in my mother, a very hazy boundary.
Yeah, yeah, and I my relationship now with my kids is I think a lot we're a lot clearer on who's who. I don't feel the need to badger my younger kids that I did to get inside of my oldest son, who I had lived with all his life until he was 14. And as I said, it also, I think, extends to the other adults I've lived with, particularly the person I live with now. I know where I end. I know that I can sustain my own life support needs by myself.
And I think you can love better then.
Yeah, yeah, because I know that I'm not with her to exist, to survive.
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing that I never knew before I had lived alone.
Nobody ever talked about it.
No.
15 years ago.
No, nor.
50s and 60s.
They weren't talking about it 5 years ago when I decided to live alone, too, when I left a suburban house.
Yeah. It's like breaking away from the same culture, you know, habits of thought. It's like you have to withdraw in order to hear your own still small voice within.
Mm-hmm. I do think that even when you have gotten clearer on that, that when you live with someone, there's to some extent some kind of struggle that you have to go through yourself to keep hearing that voice.
Sure.
Because we were not trained to listen to it. And having lived alone for only, what, a 12th of my life, I didn't have that much practice in hearing it.
Well, and I don't have so much practice either. It's
not
hard after all this time.
They don't make it easy for us.
No.
Do they?
No, they don't.
I have another call
coming
in here. Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi.
You have to turn down your radio if it's on.
Set it off.
Okay.
I lived alone for about a year and a half, and I'm pretty nervous, too.
Everybody's been saying that. I guess people are calling today who are not in the habit of calling. It's easy.
I've called in. And I guess most of the time before I lived alone, I'd always had someone, a close friend, a man or a woman or whatever, who I spent most of my time with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just went places with. And when I lived alone, you know, all of a sudden it was just me, and I wasn't working, and all of a sudden it was like all this time to myself
mm-hmm.
in my own apartment by myself. And I basically felt really good, you know, in the apartment itself. You know, I really felt like it was my home, and I felt good there. And I used to work late, like one night a week, and I'd come home at like 3 in the morning. I'd ride my bicycle home, and, you know, I'd be petrified the whole way home on my bike, you know. Mm-hmm. Couldn't wait to get in my apartment. And I'd come in, and I'd close the door behind me, and I felt, you know, wow, I was home. And one night I came home, and I discovered that I had a peeping Tom in my fire escape.
Oof.
And it, like, totally freaked me out.
Sure.
And, like,
sure.
From that time on, like, my apartment was, like, every tiny little noise, you know, it was, like, total paranoia. And, like, ever since then, I mean, I feel like it has affected my whole, you know, way of, like, dealing with the city, with things around me. I mean, I really related to what you were saying about earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
Started being scared.
Yeah.
Being out on the street.
It's real hard to have a sense that we're entitled to that space.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems to be a real fragile sense when we do get it.
Well, I mean, I think women are obviously a lot more threatened living alone than men. If I were a man, I doubt I would have had that peeping Tom in my fire escape. I mean, women are, you know, more liable to things happening on the street than men.
Did you call the police?
It was during the telephone fire.
Oh, my God.
The phone wasn't working. I stood by my door. I was afraid to go out on the street. I was afraid to stay in my apartment. It was like, you know.
Yeah, I do.
I've lived in the country before. I've, you know, lived in a lot of different places. I was never afraid of, like, picking up or moving somewhere by myself. You know, I mean, I was pretty courageous when I was younger. I mean, I'm not so old now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like since then, it just changed my whole way of, you know, relating to things.
I think that those assaults reach the place where we're really not sure.
Mm-hmm.
That we had the right, you know, kind of uncertainty about our place in the world that we may have buried. But I you know, years and years and years ago, I was burglarized several times within a few months in an apartment that I wasn't even living alone in. And still, it touched off such a sense of violation and that same kind of fear. And I think, as I said, it reached places where I think we're not entitled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where our title to what we have is real precarious and fragile.
Not so much about feeling entitled, just feeling able to deal with it.
Yeah.
We're feeling comfortable in that kind of space.
And that telephone fire was a long time back, so this has been going on for a couple of years, yes?
Right. And I mean, even when I'm in the country now, I'm scared, you know?
I don't even know what to say, except that it's hard to get past that. And do you have women friends that you can talk to about it?
Sure.
Have you a lot?
Yeah, I mean, talking about it doesn't really help, I don't think.
I don't know what does, really. I know that...
I mean, now, you know, I don't live alone now, and I'm not alone as much as I was before, so that,
mm-hmm.
you know, the times that I am alone now, I do feel somewhat better,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, it's still living on the Lower East Side, you know, and living in New York City.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I wish that there was a way that we could feel more sure of our own. I know that when I became really involved in the women's movement, the more sure I felt that there was a community that I was part of, even if they weren't in the same building or around the corner,
mm-hmm.
the more at ease I felt in the world.
Right.
The support that I got from that community was enormously helpful to me 5 years ago, and still I think that in the last 5 years, whatever crises I've gone through, I haven't been alone with them.
Right.
And I've had a lot of support.
Right, well, I think the fact that, you know, I was living alone then and that I wasn't, you know, that I wasn't working, I wasn't really involved in anything, I'm sure that,
mm-hmm.
you know, had a lot to do with it.
That made you more isolated, yeah.
Changed a lot. You know, so in those terms, I'm feeling just better about myself and dealing with, you know, the world in the city. On that level, it, you know,
yeah,
it's better.
Probably be another whole struggle the next time you have to live alone.
Yeah, well, I hope the next time I live alone, it's, you know, by choice.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not out of necessity.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't be so broke that I have to live in such a neighborhood.
Yeah, that too. That too. Good luck.
Okay, it was nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, I see you talk mostly to women. And I'm a man and I look at it from a different way. I'm totally wiped out in the past 3 years since my wife walked out. And a different experience because I was by myself all over the country for several years before I settled down and got married.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you come into the context of an apartment or even a home where you are sharing an area with someone and that person departs, you're by yourself. And even the walls seem to vibrate this.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing of it is that no matter what I do, I come home, it's empty. Then I had to say to myself, am I empty or is the house empty?
Yeah.
And this is where these fears come into play because now I'm 40 and I say to myself, I just get over a serious illness and what if I had died? I could lay in here for, you know, 10 years and nobody'd ever know I was here.
Yeah.
And this is the big fear, I think, is of knowing that you have no extension of yourself. And if you are receiving, you're also giving. And that's the biggest part, not being able to give. So you in other words, you intertwine the personalities in a relationship where it's a physical comfort, not so much an emotional or intellectual one, because I certainly enjoy being alone.
Yeah.
Times, but to come home in the morning from work and find an emptiness in life, which is effectively, destroying my own personality and so on. And I'm very self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, you know, if that could be it with the women, too. I don't know how a woman reacts to a situation like that. You mentioned that you went out of your own accord.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to hear you talk about that.
I did, because I had to. I mean, I felt, oh. You see, I had never been alone in my life, and I didn't even know what I would be like alone. I didn't know, as I said, I didn't know where I ended and the people around me began. And that part of it for me, that aloneness of not having an extension of myself for a while, was, if it was lonely, it was also a great pleasure. The thing that I think a lot of women have been talking about today is a different kind of fear. It's a sense of vulnerability in the world. I think partly because women have been taught that we're supposed to have someone around to take care of us and protect us. And it was hard for me. I felt very unprotected for the first while. And I've been hearing that from some women. I've been hearing some women say they got past it. And once in a while, I've known women who didn't seem to have it at all. I have some more calls coming in here that I'd like to take.
Very much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I can really relate to the fear, even when living with someone. Hello?
Yeah. You mean when you are alone, or do you mean all the time?
Well, I have lived alone, and during that time I was going to therapy, and I had a big thing with locking the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And what my therapist tried to say was reassure myself by treating myself like a baby. But that didn't work. And now I'm married and have a house, and I still go through the large ritual with making sure everything is locked.
Mm-hmm.
But It is better now, but I was really relating to the woman who lived on the Lower East Side.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was much, much younger and I was living alone in the village with my son, and he was four, and he wasn't much in terms of physical protection, but I had a strong sense of not being alone.
You mean in the community sense?
In the sense, I was, mostly it was just, no, I mean, it was him. It was the fact that I had a kid who I was responsible for, another person.
I still feel like I could be so violated against, even though my husband is there in bed with me or in the house, I still feel very strongly that people can break in and, you know, do all sorts of havoc to my life.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But I grew up in a very paranoid kind of house where, to this day, my parents are very paranoid about people breaking in, so that didn't help at all.
I don't know if it's paranoid, you know. People, especially women, do get assaulted. They do get... I mean, I'm not trying to encourage you to feel fearful, but I don't think either that you should... It's not paranoid in the sense of crazy. There are things to be scared of.
But that's what's so confusing in that I don't get that kind of support from people around me. Mostly, for some reason, most of the people I've always known are very calm kind of people who aren't afraid of anything like that happening. And then I remember when Nixon was in, I says, well, there's a list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even before a list was published, everybody says, you're just being paranoid. And then, of course, there was a list.
Yeah, yeah. I think that people who haven't confronted those fears are probably walling themselves off from them.
Just not facing them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that it's possible for us to get past them, to accept the fact that dreadful things can happen, and meanwhile, this minute, if it's not happening...
We're just lucky.
and, you know, get it while you can. Make the most of it of this time. It's like being on an airplane, you know. My sister once said to me, she flew a lot, and I asked her if she was afraid. And she said, well, no, I've just made up my mind every time I get into that little space that I'm going to die there, and that's the end of that.
Oh, that's dreadful, because I'm doing something I'm not enjoying right now, and it's the kind of thing, well, in a few months it'll be over. But anyway, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. Bye in your program.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, I was calling in about feeling vulnerable when you're living alone.
Mm-hmm. Do you live alone?
Yeah. And I've lived alone a lot. But for the last 2 years, I've lived in New York City. And I've been alone, well, at least half of the time, if not more.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, like, as you say, I'd rather live alone than live with someone I'm not really crazy about.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's just more difficult for me to be with someone I'm not crazy about than to be alone.
Sure.
But ideally, it would be nice to, like, live with people and alone at the same time, you know, if that can be worked out where everyone has a... Say, if you're on some piece of land together and everyone has their own separate small house,
sure.
You know. And then when you want to get together, you can get together. You know, my idea would be like Westbeth.
Mm-hmm.
Women could, you know, nothing but women could take over a larger apartment complex.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they want to get together, they can get together. If they're not, they have their separate living units.
Yeah.
They have their separate spaces.
Yeah. That is a nice dream. It's one that I've shared. It's also, you know, it certainly seems like the ideal answer.
Yeah, it'd be very exciting because there's a lot of nice things about living alone. I think after a certain time, if you've fulfilled your needs of being alone and you've done what you wanted to do and you've written your letters and written your poems or wrote a story or whatever you've wanted mm-hmm. to accomplish, there's moments when you would like to somehow have the ease of communicating with someone, you know, and it doesn't have to be just the other person. It could be,
yeah,
you know, a number of other women, you know, and share your experiences. And it'd be, I think, fuller and richer, you know, to have that kind of interaction whenever you wanted it. not have to go to the bars and not have to, you know, go out, you know.
I felt I had that to some extent during the years I was alone. I wasn't in a building that there were other women in, but I had a lot of women in the women's community that I was real close to, who I did spend a lot of time with. And it seemed to me that at that time I had a lot of the best of having privacy and having a real strong sense of community and people to share things with. And I have to say now that I am living with someone who I can share more of, you know, more what? Uh-huh. More deeply, more intimately, because she's there all the time. Uh-huh. Because she has all the data, not just a piece of it, uh-huh. you know, of what's been going on, and because we communicate real well, that it is richer in many ways than the being alone was, but it's at the price of that marvelous sense of mine
right.
that I used to have, my space,
right.
My time for which I am totally not accountable.
Right, you don't have to accommodate.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, for sure, there are things to be said on both sides. It's been interesting to me. I think I was a little afraid that 5 minutes after I started this, taking calls, everybody was going to want to talk about relationships. And people really aren't. They're really talking mostly about being alone. It seems to me that it's a conflict for a lot of us.
I wanted to ask also, as far as the fear of the intruder.
Mm-hmm.
You say that since you were living with someone, or whenever you're living with someone, you're not as frightened of that crazy who's outside the door waiting to break in. Do you ever feel that kind of fear anymore? Well, first I'll ask that, and then I have a comment.
I haven't been feeling most of the time, no. In fact, I'm pretty casual these days about locking the door. I have to check at night when I go to sleep to make sure that I locked it when I came in, mm-hmm. which I guess is some measure. You know, there have certainly been times in my life when I triple locked it as soon as I came in and then checked it every 10 minutes, you know, to see if it was still locked. It seems to me that has a real direct correlation with how comfortable I am in my life, because the last place I lived when I was very uncomfortable, the fire escape window seemed to me always a threat.
Uh-huh.
And now it doesn't. I hardly ever think of the fact that there's a fire escape window there. So that it seems to me always that fear has been a very direct function
uh-huh.
of how comfortable I was in my own life at the moment.
Right. I agree to some extent. Also, I think, you know, when I know therapists that say, you know, you shouldn't feel these fears. It's unnatural to have these fears. And I think that that's wrong to tell a woman in this world that it's wrong to be afraid, in a sense, because there are so many. I mean, there is a war against women on in this world. And in New York City, it's very evident all around. And I think that women have to somehow be gentle to themselves and not listen to, you know, there are valid reasons to be afraid, and it's unfortunate, you know. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say, but it, to have to, like, for women, it sounds like I keep hearing, you know, I've got to get over this fear, you know, of the person outside. And I just say to that, I say, you know, there is a real fear. It's all right to feel the fear, you know. It's all right. Do what you can to allay the fear, but don't beat your head against the wall, because it is real. It's not unreal. That's all I have to say.
For me, it was a matter not of getting over it, but of getting past it, of accepting I think what happened when I lived alone, and now I'm not just talking about just about being a woman, but about being a human being in a world where we're vulnerable in many ways, a lot more if we're women. It was a matter of making a peace with that, not of forgetting that that was true.
Right.
But of accepting it, knowing it, and then going about the business of my daily life without having it intruded on too much by those fears.
Right.
But to pretend they're not there is fatuous, and I don't think any feminist therapists say that to women.
Right. I don't think so either. But they're few and far between.
No. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. More than there were. I want to tell you that in 1971, when I had what we now refer to kind of blithely as a feminist identity crisis at the time, I didn't know a name for it, and I was just pretty freaked out. It was real hard to find a feminist therapist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier now.
Okay.
There are places to call, people who know. Anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sorry. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello. Are you the lady? Am I directly on the air now?
Yes, you are.
Oh,
if you turn down your own radio.
I didn't realize you were wondering why people were so nervous, and I'm 47 years old and usually a fairly together person, and I am so nervous about calling. It is unbelievable. But I did want to comment a little bit on the business of living alone, because I've been doing a lot of thinking about it. I'm 47 and never lived alone. And as a matter of fact, was so afraid at the thought of living alone that when I ended my first marriage, I was married, already had somebody, and was married within 1 hour of my divorce.
Yeah.
The whole idea of being on my own was absolutely overwhelming. And I have only recently come to realize that this is part of what drove me into a second marriage. But I think, too, that you can live with somebody and feel very much alone.
Yeah.
And it isn't only literally living alone. And as I've come recently to feel better about myself and feel that I could manage an independent life, that I really could stand on my own 2 feet if I had to, the living alone doesn't frighten me so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I had to, or if I wanted to, I could.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst parts about being alone, in a sense, that frightened me the most was being responsible for kids on my own.
Yeah.
Having the thought that it was, I wouldn't be alone, but, and I don't know whether I would have resented it, but the feeling of having two, at that time I had already had 2 children,
mm-hmm.
when I was divorced, the feeling of having that responsibility by myself, another thing that frightened me to death. I couldn't bear the thought of being alone with these children, of really having to be a parent alone.
Mm-hmm. I did it. I did it when my first marriage broke up. And when my second marriage broke up,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that helped me decide to leave the kids in their father's custody.
How did you reach such a decision?
How did I reach it?
Yeah, it must have been hard, well, no?
It was hard. I was married to a very nurturing man who was passionately devoted to the kids, and the first conversation we had about it, in fact, you know, I said, well, shall I take the children? And he said, over my dead body.
Oh.
So that, and I...
He hasn't said that, but that was a threat.
Well, no, he didn't mean it as a threat. He really wanted the kids. That was one thing. The other thing was that having lived alone with my oldest son,
mm-hmm.
I knew that it had made some real bad things happen, that we had created an interdependence that 10 years of my second marriage hadn't cured. In certain senses, when my older son, who's almost 19 now, comes to visit me, and when my little kids are in the house, I am more conscious of what he's doing than I am of what they're doing. That sense that, I guess I've said that a lot of times on this program today, of not knowing where you end and somebody else begins, got so muddled in the years that I lived alone with him, that I knew I did not want to do that with the other kids. That I knew that the only way that I was going to grow up and let them grow up as separate people.
Do you feel your older son is functioning as an independent person now? That you have...
He's not, as a matter of fact, functioning very well as an independent person. I mean, I wouldn't even feel comfortable saying that on the air, except that he's not in New York.
Oh.
And he can't hear this. And he is not... He's not being, so far at least, he's only almost 19, but he's not being real successful at independence. And I feel to some extent...
Some way to what happened those years?
Yeah. Yeah, that we got too deeply into each other.
But, maybe that's also related to fear of being alone, that you tie yourself in that...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Strongly to somebody.
For sure.
That's dependent on you and that you become dependent on, I guess it could be. It's frightening, really. That kind of tying in when you're not ready to stand.
Yeah.
I think it really has to do with whether you're ready to stand on your own 2 feet or not, whether you really have a sense of self and can feel good about yourself. Maybe that's when you can let a child grow up or when you can... Live alone.
Yeah, I think probably, on the other hand, living alone helps you get it. I mean, when that first marriage broke up and I was alone with him, I was 20 years old.
Yeah, that's too young.
You know, and...
It seems to me at
37 that was very, very young. You know, I look at him now and I think that when I was his age,
yeah.
I was a mother.
Yeah, that's crazy, really.
Well, it's pretty crazy, yeah.
Well, in a sense, I think we rush into motherhood. Fast. I don't know. I do have another child, interestingly enough, who I've had since this marriage, and of course I'm a great deal older
mm-hmm.
right now, as a matter of fact. But and I feel differently about being a mother. But I just want to say one other thing.
I hear that kid.
Mother, who's close to 80, visited me. Lives alone in a community now in Florida, and has twice been widowed. And I couldn't help asking her whether she was lonely alone.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow I was brought up as a woman to feel that being alone is not right. Somehow there's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
There's something basically wrong with you, if you even think in these terms.
Yeah.
And I think she would find it hard to admit, but I think she's happier now.
Mm-hmm.
Alone with a good deal of contact with other people.
Yeah.
Her own way than she's ever been. But she couldn't quite say that.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to feel that I needed to ask her, you know, how she was surviving.
Yeah.
Because I was worried that a woman alone couldn't survive, but that she's really doing very well, and that you can live alone, and you can survive. And I think that's something that women have to clarify, begin to understand. It was not part of my upbringing. I couldn't even conceive of it.
Yeah, it wasn't part of mine
either.
Knew
I would get married. I was encouraged to go to college, to have a career, but at the same time, there was no doubt in anybody's mind that the other part of that was getting married and being a mother and giving up your career for a while, as long as necessary.
Yeah, in fact, that was your main career and
the other was secondary,
yeah,
right.
A sideline.
But I think things are changing and women will feel differently about things. And I
hope
enjoy your program very, very much. And
thank you.
I'm glad I finally called. It was really so hard. You have no idea how difficult it is to pick up the phone and talk to a voice.
I hope next time it'll be... Well, I'm just talking to a voice, too.
I know, but I don't know why it should be easier for you.
It isn't. It isn't. Honest.
But you, but you seem to feel at ease about it, and you have a very nice manner with people, and very open and very accepting of differences and where they are.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Thank you. You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. I thought that was going to be a heavy subject, being alone. It has been heavy for me, I guess, all these years. I think one of the things I haven't said yet this afternoon was that from the time I was very small, I hungered for it. I dreamt of it. I had a woman who was my best friend throughout my childhood, and we used to talk. We had both been born in New York, and her parents continued to live in New York, and mine didn't. I lived in the suburbs most of my life as a kid. And we used to talk about, I wanted two things. I wanted to live in New York, and I wanted to live alone. we used to talk a lot about having an apartment that was somehow or other immediately over Times Square. That was before I knew that the Village was the real heart of the city, and I used to think that Times Square was. I think that she has spent even less time alone than I have. She's been married 6 times since then. There's some moral there in the erosion of those childhood dreams. It's I feel more comfortable with it now. I think for the first time in my life that I'm not alone, absolutely out of choice, that I'm with the person I'm with, not to be alone, but to be with that person, and that's a good thing. But I have a feeling that if I were to live alone again, I might have to go through a lot of those same battles all over again. I wanted to play a piece of music which is more or less on the topic. This is from Mountain Moving Day, which was, I guess, one of the first feminist records that was put out. It's either the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band or the Chicago Women's Rock Band. I will find out while the record is playing. This is Mountain Moving Day. We'll be right back. That was the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band with a little Defiance from 1972. That's 5 years ago. I guess some of us... Well, 72 is when I also was thinking that I could do whatever I wanted to. I must say that the events of the 5 years since have confirmed that in some senses and have smashed it in others. There are a lot of things I can't do, but there are a lot of things I can, more than I thought I could. And I think that my 3 years alone did me a world of good. It taught me a lot about myself. They gave me, those years gave me my poetry, for one thing. And I really should say this. This is a real important thing to say, that until I was living alone, this is especially for all of you who said that you were nervous when you called up today. Up until the time I lived alone, I was mic shy. And in fact, I had once fainted when I was confronted with a microphone. And shortly after I started living alone, I got involved in producing a conference for New York Radical Feminists, a conference on marriage, women and marriage. And when we were publicizing it, we got some radio gigs, some chances to talk about it on radio. And the women I was working with said, "Oh, Judy, you should take one of those. You speak well, you have a good manner." And I had been living alone about 3 or 4 months at the time, and I had beaten off a lot of those demons that we were talking about earlier. And I figured, well, I'm not going to tell my sisters that I'm mic shy, because maybe I'm not going to be mic shy anymore. And the first one that we had was at 4 o'clock in the morning, I think, on Alex Bennett's show. And we got up there at 4 o'clock in the morning, and by that time I was feeling a little nervous, because I thought, good Lord, I wasn't alone. So that if I had turned out still to have this infirmity, the other women could have taken over, but I would have been real humiliated by it. And we got into the studio, and they had these little teeny lapel mics that once they were on, you hardly knew they were there. And anyway, I figured it was 4 o'clock in the morning. There was probably nobody really listening. I didn't know much about radio. I didn't know there were always people listening. So I got through that one all right. And then the next one we did was much earlier in the evening. And they had these big mics like cannons sticking in front of my face. But by that time, I knew that I wasn't going to faint if I had to talk over a microphone. So I did, and here I am. But it was not until I lived alone that I had a strong enough sense of myself, I think, so that I could get in front of a microphone and say whatever it was that I had to say. As a matter of fact, I was not living alone when I started doing radio. I mean, here at the station. But I think if I hadn't had those 3 years, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I wouldn't have been able to do a lot of things. I cannot imagine having driven a cab coming from the place I was when I was a housewife. Although, in fact, I was driving one about 7 or 8 months after I moved out and was on my own. That was also, by the way, the several years I spent driving the cab were a different kind of aloneness. I had also, like most women, I had never worked without having a lot of immediate colleagues. I had never worked in it where I was by myself most of the time. And that aloneness, too, for those several years also, was 3 years also, a different, not the same 3 years. But that also, I think, taught me a lot about myself and about the world I lived in and about the patriarchy. and about class structure. That was a great 3 years in the cab. I also wrote some real good poetry in the cab, which was also a place where I had a real strong sense of my own space. I am just about running out of time here. This is Judy Pasternak, and I will be back next Tuesday with More Than Half the World. That's a little piece of arithmetic to remind you all that together we are more than half the world. That's women I'm talking about. And this program will be a space for us to have our share our experiences and talk about our lives. It has been a pleasure being with you. Meanwhile, between now and next Tuesday, if you're hungering for more woman-identified programming, you will not hear the Real Live Lesbian Show tonight, but, oh, and you won't hear Viv Sutherland's Women's Studies either. Those have been bumped for the marathon. But on Thursday night, you will hear Irene Yarrow's Every Woman's Space at 9 o'clock. And on Sunday afternoon, you will hear The Velvet Sledgehammer, Women's Magazine of the Air. That's at 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. And on Monday night, you'll hear Jerry Hatch's Our City, Our Lives, next Tuesday afternoon.
Looking down the line. Excuse me.